We're in a series called The Great Storyteller, and I've been saying this, that the parables of Jesus are not nice, clear, conventional stories. I think anyone who thinks that about the stories of Jesus clearly has not read them, right? The stories of Jesus are disorienting and crazy and confusing. And I think really the way that I understand them is the parables of Jesus are designed to disorient us from our conventional understanding of the way that the world works, where it's able to usher us gently into the upside down kingdom that is the kingdom of God. And for me, I think when I think of the Bible, I tend to think, I'm a big iPhone guy. Love iPhones. I have owned, I believe, every iPhone. I owned the original iPhone and I'm on the upgrade plan. That's just what I do. So if there's a new Apple thing coming out, I'm going to spend money on that. We don't do fancy dinners and all that, but we do buy lots of Apple technology. But I remember the first time they introduced the original iPhone, it was so revolutionary and so different. And like, we didn't even know the questions to ask. I remember Steve Jobs had it and he turned it on and we were thinking, oh my gosh, does it have a calculator? And it was like, this is the stupidest question you could possibly ask about an iPhone. Like, we didn't even know the right questions to ask of a phone. We couldn't even conceive of what the iPhone would ultimately become, of course. I think of Henry Ford. He's the guy who makes the first mass-produced automobile. And he said this, that if I would have asked people what they wanted, they would have said they wanted a faster horse. Right? And the idea being like, not only did they not know how to do it, they didn't even know what they needed, right? And so I think in the same way, when you think about the Bible, I think oftentimes people have a way of coming to the Bible having already decided what it is that they need. You think about like sex, drugs, money, power, like these are pretty much the best ideas that we've come up with. And so if you come to the Bible just wanting like tools to fulfill the life that you already think you're supposed to have, I think sometimes you just don't even know the right questions to ask when you come to the Bible. When you come to Jesus, that's certainly true for me. And so for me, when I'm doing any series, but especially this series, when I'm just going through the teachings of Jesus, I'm really working hard to remove any preconceived notions about what I think Jesus says, who I think Jesus is, and I'm just wanting him to be able to speak, right? I just want to allow his story to be our story, right? And like his point, whatever his point is, I just want that to be our point in this series. And so it's been a great challenge for me, and I feel like I need to warn you that sometimes Jesus is not as nice as I am, and that's really true tonight. He can be pretty aggressive. Bryce, it's true, right? He can be pretty intense. And so that's certainly true tonight in a couple different areas, but I'm really looking forward to it. Before we get into it, a brief story. My friends and I, we have embarked upon this year, 2018, on a reading challenge. I don't know if you guys do this, but we have all committed to reading a certain amount of books. I've committed to reading 26 books this year, which is one every 2 weeks. For some of you, that's a very modest goal. Whatever I do, David Goldman is going to do one more, because that's just the kind of guy he is. So I think he's doing 27. Someone in here, is it Ray, has committed to 52 books? Is that right? 52 book, which is very ambitious. And so for me, I've been reading some books, but now that I have a kid, it's a little bit harder. And so I'm starting to fall behind a little bit on my reading challenge, and I'm starting to get a little worried. So what I decided to do is to read just an easy book to get some credit. And so I read recently, I just finished this past weekend, a book called Coraline. Has anyone heard of the book Coraline? Okay, so Coraline is by an author, Neil Gaiman. He's actually an author that I love. I've read multiple things. It's pretty much a children's book. He originally wrote it for his five-year-old daughter. I don't know, it's a couple hundred pages or something, but he was in the introduction, he's talking about how interesting it is that he made a book accidentally that is an adventure for kids and for some reason is terrifying for adults. And I found it terrifying. And so I think that I've probably graduated somehow into adulthood. The basic idea of the book, Caroline, is this. There's a young girl, and she's small for her age, and she lives in a very peculiar house. And one day she comes upon this door, and she opens the door, and behind the door is a brick wall. And so she's not sure what that is about. Maybe it's a blocked-off room. So she closes it. Later on, she goes back and opens the door a second time. And instead of the brick wall, there's this dark hallway. And so she walks through this dark hallway. And she discovers basically an alternate version of her house and the world that is a lot like her world, but it's just a little bit off. Right, so she has her other parents. She has another mom and another dad that are a lot like her parents, but they're just a little bit different. For example, instead of eyes, they have black buttons where there should be eyes. And cats talk, and it's very weird. It's very disorienting, but I think that it's kind of in a weird way. I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about the parables of Jesus, that in a very real way, I think there's kind of a parallel there that the stories of Jesus encourage you to see the world in a new and disorienting way. And so my title that tonight, if you're taking notes, is this, Seeds and Weeds. Seeds and Weeds, Matthew 13. In Matthew 13, we come across what is known as the apocalyptic parables. And I know that kind of sounds like something having to do with nuclear bomb and mass destruction. The word apocalyptic just means uncovering. So what these parables are talking about is they're talking about the end of time when Jesus says there will be a time when everything that we've done and everything that we are will essentially be uncovered. And the word parable, it's from the Greek parabole, which just means to compare. And so we're talking about two apocalyptic parables, the parable of the sower and the parable of the weeds. And what I need you to know before we get into them is this, that these parables are unique in all of the stories that Jesus tells, because these are the only two parables in the entire Gospels where Jesus provides a very detailed explanation. He tells the story, and then he goes to his disciples and explains what he means by these parables. And so they're super important. In fact, when describing the first parable, he says this in Mark chapter 4, verse 13, "Don't you understand this parable? How then will you understand any parable?" Which is quite the statement. I mean, you got to admit, like, if you don't understand this one, you're not going to understand any of the parables. And so the tension that we're wanting to talk about tonight, you could say essentially like this, I wonder if you would agree, that some people last in the Christian faith and many don't. And that's what we're wanting to talk about. In fact, now my title here at the church is executive pastor. Before that, I was the youth pastor at this church. And so this is a statistic that probably every youth pastor in the nation knows, and it's this, is that 75% of churched high schoolers drop out of the church permanently by the time they graduate from college. 75%. So when you think about a room of 100 teenagers, that only 25%, 25 of those kids end up being a part of the church as an adult. And I think that's, I don't know if it's the same for adults. It might be a little bit better, but it's not great. You got to admit that there's just an incredible amount of people that grew up in church and have lost confidence for some reason or another when it comes to the church. So Matthew chapter 13, I believe that that's what Jesus is really dealing with. In Matthew 13, a little backstory, Jesus is at the Sea of Galilee, and I've told you this before, but when you think the Sea of Galilee, you think a sea. Really, it's more like a lake. I have a picture of the Sea of Galilee, so you can see that you can see the other side. It's just like a big lake. It's not even as big as Elephant Butte, which is, granted, pretty big, right? And so you can see all the way around, and so Jesus is there, and people have gathered around him, and there's so many people around him, and he's wanting to talk to them. What he has to do is he has to back up. He gets backed up to the water, and he ends up hopping onto a boat that's docked on the shore, and he preaches these series of parables from the boat to the people who are standing on the land. And so after he talks and he tells these parables, the disciples ask him this question, "Jesus, why is it that you always speak in parables?" And Jesus, he quotes Isaiah, and he says this, Matthew 13, "Though seeing, they do not see, though hearing, they do not hear or understand." which is a very interesting thing to say, I think. And what Jesus is really saying is this: in order to understand his message, you have to be transformed into something else. You have to be transformed into something new. And so the two parables are this, both in Matthew 13. We're just going to read them. And just to warn you, it's going to be a fair amount of text. I'm reading from the NIV this evening. And if you don't have your Bible, of course, the words are on the screen. Matthew 13, verse 1 says this: that same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Lake. What did I say? Leak? Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it while the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, here's number one: a farmer went out to sow his seed, and he was scattering. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, that's number one, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, that's number two, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, this is number three, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, this is number four, where it produced a crop 160 or 30 times what was sown. So I'm sure you guys probably know that parable, the majority of you that have been raised in church. And then he explains it. This is the explanation he meets later to his disciples, and he explains exactly what he means with the parables, which almost never happens. Verse 18, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. Jesus says this: when anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. Okay, so that's parable number one. Then number two, skip down to verse 24. Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in the field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. When the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in the field? Where then did the weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he replied. The servants asked him, "Do you want us to go up and pull them up?" "No," he answered, "because while you are pulling up the weeds, you may uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, then gather the wheat and bring it into the barn." So then explanation number two, we're almost done, verse 36. Then he left the crowd and went into the house. His disciples came to him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field." He answered, "The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seeds stand for the people of the kingdom. The weeds are the people of the evil one, and the evil who sows them, or the enemy who sows them, is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. As the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. They will be thrown into the blazing furnace, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Whoever has ears, let them hear." Okay, so those are pretty good, right? Pretty good parables. The summary might be something like this. The first one I think you guys are familiar with is the parable of the sower, right? So this is when a man goes and he sows seed and it falls upon four different kinds of soil. This is called broadcast sowing. So what we see here is it's not like they're digging tiny little holes and putting a tiny little seed in and covering it up. They're broadcast sowing, so that just means they're throwing out seed. And so they're not even expecting that all of these seeds would ever grow into anything, because there's not holes, right? They're just throwing it and they're hoping that some ultimately is going to grow. And so there's four different soils. My slide that shows the four different soils are these. Some seed falls on the path, other seed falls on the rocky places, other seed falls upon the thorny soil, and other seed falls upon the good soil. And what's interesting is this, only the seed that falls on the last one is the seed that survives and the seed that grows. And so then when Jesus is coming and he's explaining the parable, what the heck he's talking about, essentially what he says this, is that the soils represent different people's hearts, right? And that's why I would say, for me personally, like, I know we call it the parable of the sower. I would rather us call it the parable of the soil, because really that's the only thing that's changing here, right? Like the seed is the same, right? The sower is the same, but the soil is different. It's the only thing that changes. And then we go to the second parable. This parable is essentially probably a little bit more unusual for some of you. The idea here is that there's this man and he goes and he sows good seed. But while the man is sleeping, an enemy comes and he sows weeds in the field. And then as the crop is starting to rise, the servants recognize that there's weeds in the field as well. And so they go and say this, "Didn't you sow good seed? Like, where? Why is there weeds?" And the master says this, "An enemy did this." And so then the servants come and say, "Do you want us to pull up the weeds then?" And the master says, "No, we don't do that, because if we pull up the weeds, we're likely to hurt the good seed as well. We'll separate the good from the bad at harvest time." So in this second story, the Bible scholars would say that probably the seed that was sown, it's called zizania, and it's pretty much like wheat. But there's no grain. Here's a picture. It's just stalk. So on the left, you can see here's wheat, right? This is like classic wheat. And on the right, this is zizania. You can see that they look pretty similar, but there's one major difference, right? There's no wheat on the one on the right. Can you see all that little fruit, all that stuff that's going to fall off and it's going to actually like turn into food? That's like the fruit of the plant. The zizania, it looks like the wheat, but it doesn't have any. And so then he goes on to explain, my next slide, you could say it kind of like this, is that the farmer is Jesus. This is the explanation. And the field that he's planting the seeds is the world. And the good seed is God's people. And the bad seed is the enemy's people. And the enemy is Satan. And the harvesters are the angels. That at the end of time, they're going to separate the good from the bad, right? Says the story. And so you would ask yourself this question possibly, how is the good and the bad separated at the end? Well, he tells us it's by the fruit. And if you don't know this, the fruit is a long-standing Bible metaphor for the things that you do. Right? Fruit just means what is the product of your life. And so I want you to think, if you'd be willing, I know these are two big parables that seem a lot different, but I want you to think of the two parables as one big picture of your Christian life, where the first parable of the throwing of the seeds, that represents your beginning, your coming to Christ, your growing in Christ. And then the second parable is the end of your life, where you're looking back on what you've done. So you could say kind of like a summary might be something like this. A seed is planted in your heart. Will it live? Will it grow? Will it mature? Will it produce a harvest? And in the same way, in the end, God will be the one to say what kind of plant you were. Were you wheat or were you a weed? And of course, the litmus test here is the fruit, right? What is the fruit that is produced in your life? So I have 3 points for you from these two parables that I think are really good, really important, especially when it comes to being someone who survives the Christian faith. I can think of, me personally, when I think of like the people that filled this room and when I think of the people that filled that room 15 years ago, I think it's only a fraction of people that are still in church or serving God at all. And so I think that Jesus in these parables is providing a real insight for us when it comes to being Christians who stand the test of time. Okay, number one is this. Point number one is this. Fruit is what counts. Fruit is what counts. Think about both of these parables. They're talking about the fruit of your life. The first parable is talking about how the condition of your heart, right? Think about your heart. The condition of your heart is what affects your ability to live a fruitful life, right? And then the second, think about the second parable. Basically, it's saying this is that real Christians and fake Christians look very similar. But there's one big difference between the two, and that's their fruit, right? What their lives ultimately look like. This sounds mean to say, and it doesn't even feel good to say, but we live in a world filled with real Christians and fake Christians. I just think that has to be obvious. Think about this. 83% of Americans self-identify as Christians. 83%. So here's a rhetorical question. If you really felt like, imagine 83% of Americans identified as the deepest value of who they are and how they understand the world is to be a follower of Jesus Christ. Do you think that the world would look a little bit different? Of course, right? Like, so obvious. Not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, right? Like, not everyone who claims the name of Christ is a true and honest Christ follower. And Jesus is really clear that we're not saved by works, right? We know that. I hope that my teaching conveys that clearly every week. We're not saved by works, right? We're saved by grace. But Jesus is very clear to say this, is that the works of somebody is how you're able to tell the inner state of the person. And so for me, when we're talking about fruit, the message that's really clear for me, and I hope is helpful for you, is you just have to understand that it's your responsibility to take responsibility of your own Christianity, right? Like, your relationship with God is your responsibility. Like, I'm a pastor, and so I've given my entire life to this, if you can believe it. This is my job. I read and I talk and I make weird Facebook videos and I counsel with people. And that's, as weird as it sounds, that's what I do for a living. And so you would think, in a certain extent, that maybe I would bear a little bit of responsibility for caring for you. And I think that there is maybe a sense there, but hear me, at the end of the day, like, as much as I want to, I can't make you want God. That's just not my responsibility, right? Like, and so at the end of the day, whether or not you are a Christ follower is ultimately up to you. And as the parable would say, it's up to the condition of your heart, really. Like, what the seed is the same, right? The seed comes and it hits your heart, and it depends on what kind of soil, not even what kind of seed, right? Everyone got the same seed, but some people lasted and some people didn't. And so I hope that's even an encouragement to you, because in the same way that it's not my responsibility to make you want God, it's not your responsibility to make other people want God. And so if you're thinking like, oh, God's my fault, you know, because I was a parent and I didn't love my kids the way that I should, and I didn't give them the example that I should, and I didn't raise them at church the way that I should. Listen, I think that can all contribute and make it ultimately harder for someone to follow God. But at the end of the day, like, it's not your fault. Everyone has to make that decision for themselves. I think about people who, like, brought someone to church, right? And then I think about the people who were essentially brought to church. And I can think of some right now, that there's people who are thriving at church and they're doing great and they love church and they love God and they read their Bibles and they love to pray, right? And then the person who brought them to church has long since moved on and is no longer serving God. I just think, how strange is that? And the reality is this, is that it's your responsibility. If you want to be a Christian, that's something that's ultimately up to you. It's not up to your pastor. It's not up to your parents. But it's you, right? Like, that is your choice. And I just think we live in a culture that is full of blame, right? I'm a certain way, and here's why. Because of this guy and this girl and this guy and this girl. You just have to, if you want to be a Christian who lasts, you have to take responsibility for your own life. Doesn't mean that pastors don't mess up. Doesn't mean the pastors don't do stupid things. Doesn't mean the church doesn't wound people. I'll probably talk about that later. In fact, I think in here, it's super true, right? But at the end of the day, it's you, and you get to decide. There's people who push through, even though the church is imperfect. There's people who push through and are able to still serve God after 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. And there's other people that the first time something hard happens, they take off. And at the end of the day, it's just up to you whether or not you are going to be someone who follows God. So number one is this: fruit is what counts. Number two is this: the condition of your heart determines how you do in the Christian life. The condition of your heart determines how you do in the Christian life. So what I want to do is I want to go through really briefly the different seeds, right? There was four, or the same seed, but four different soils that the seed landed on. So number one is this. We're going to talk about the seed that fell on the path. Here's the text. It says, Jesus says this: when anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The idea, what Jesus is saying is this, is that some of the soil is just packed too hard, right? So like when you throw a seed, it just bounces off the soil because it's just hard. And the idea is this, is that people who have hard hearts can't understand Jesus. And that's just the truth. I know a lot of people who are like this. It's not a problem with the seed, right? It's a problem with the soil. I live in the North Valley. And so we have some of these really pretty ditch banks. One cool thing about living in the North Valley is there's these pretty ditch banks and you can go on walks. And so we go on walks sometimes and there's dirt that has just been walked on decade after decade after decade after decade. And it's like concrete. Like I don't think you could scoop it. I mean, it's just a rock. I think what Jesus is kind of saying is that's how some people's life is that they're just really hard. Just really hard people. Like they haven't said they're sorry in 10 years. You know what I mean? Like they're always right. There's nothing tender about them at all. And Jesus says this, like oftentimes those are the people who don't make it. Those people who are hard-hearted. And just like the soil by the ditch bank, right? I think sometimes there's people who've just been walked on decade after decade after decade, and they've gone through hard things, and they've been in an abusive situation, or they were mistreated as a child. And so then what they do is they just live their entire life with like a suit of armor on in order to protect themselves, right? In order to protect myself, I'm just gonna be hard. I'm just gonna be tough. And Jesus says this is that the gospel can't get through with soil like that. Ephesians, Paul says this in Ephesians chapter 4, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. So that's the seed that fell on the path, being hard-hearted. Number two is this, the seed that fell on rocky places. Here's what Jesus says. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. So we've talked about this before in here, but there's a lot of Christians who cannot handle the idea of the Christian faith costing them something. You just can't. There's a lot of people who have watched too much like weird tele-evangelist type of Christianity, and they think that really the Christian faith is some sort of weird way to find your way to a life that's always easy. Right, and then when that doesn't happen, right, when life doesn't just all of a sudden become like perfect, they're so shocked and they're so disappointed and they feel like life has or Christianity has maybe lied to them, right? And so, but the truth is this: is like sometimes life can be hard, and just because you're a Christian doesn't always make it easy. And I want to add to that is this: sometimes church life can be hard. It can, right? Like sometimes living and surviving in a church community for a few decades is not easy. I work for the pastors of this church, and they're also my in-laws. And if you think that's easy, I'd love to have coffee with you. It could be really hard, right? Like ministry can be super hard. And people who come and they go, and I feel like people are really in this with me, and then they'll leave and it's hurtful, and people will write mean emails, and there'll be contention and there'll be strife. And church ministry can be, or church life can be incredibly hard. And if I'm being honest, I don't think weak people can do it. I think just a lot of people end up getting offended, right? And just leave the church. I think that's the number one reason why people leave a church is to get offended. It's just too hard. There's some sort of interpersonal relationship issue, and they can't handle, they can't deal, they can't forgive. So then what they end up doing is they end up just leaving the church. And again, like I said before, of course the church has offended people. Of course, we've wounded people. Like, think about historically, think about the American church. We've wounded minorities, right? We've wounded women. That is true. That's part of your history. But I also understand this, is that some people are able to see the flaws and the imperfections of the church, and they're able to push through, while other people see the flaws and imperfections of the church, and it takes them out. You know who can really get offended at church? I'll be honest. Ready? Pastors. Being a pastor is incredibly hard. People who have been in this room that have been pastors can tell you being a pastor is excruciatingly hard sometimes. I recently looked at a study, 2011. The average tenure of a pastor is 3.6 years. Average tenure of a youth pastor, 11 months. Yeah. That's amazing. That's how long people last. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, people like being hypocrites at the church. I just think we should just mark as read, just acknowledge like, yeah, that's just the way that it is, that there are hypocrites in the church. I'm just fine with that. Like, any church that I'm going to be a part of, there's going to be hypocrites because I'm one, right? Like, I just think that anytime people are in something, there's going to be hypocrisy, right? God's part is perfect, but our part is not, right? Our part has failings. And I want to encourage you in this. The Bible is exceptionally clear, story after story after story, is that something doesn't have to be perfect to be of God. Something doesn't have to be perfect to be a God. And Jesus comes and he says this in this story. He says, those of you who are offended, well, those are those of you who don't last. Those who get offended take themselves out. So that was number two, rocky places. Number three is this seed that fell among thorns. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. So here, essentially what Jesus is saying is this, is that some people don't last in the Christian faith because they get distracted, right? And he gives two examples. His number one is the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth. So number one, the worries of this life. This is basically, it's just the concerns of living life, right? This is just being like, I'm just so busy, right? He's saying like, it's the people who are just so busy all the time and so consumed with work, 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 activity, activity, activity. They are the people who have a tendency of not lasting in the Christian faith. As someone who used to be a youth pastor, I think about this all the time when it comes to like, there's these kids and they come to youth group and they love God and they're learning about God and they love the community and they love all their friends and they can't wait to come to youth group. But then they have these parents who just like cram their schedules full of 10,000 pounds of like sports and debate team and, you know, clubs and activities. And before you know it, there's schedule is so full that like they don't even realize it, but church just has a way of getting like squished out the back. And we know, as people, Brad could tell you, as we know, is that kids who love God and are excited about it in a church community, well, you take them out of the church and give them a couple years, it's pretty much gone. It's pretty much over. And we think like, listen, your kid is not going to be a professional baseball player. Like everyone's like, yeah, Timmy, he's going to make it to the MLB. We're like, yeah, he's not. Trust me, he's going to do fine in high school. He's going to be a little bit of college. He's not going to get drafted. And at the end of the day, what's going to happen is this. I mean, at the end of the day, what you're going to have is a kid that you have consistently taught that the God thing is cool unless you have something else better to do. It's just an incredible mistake to teach kids that you can do the God thing unless there's something going on. But Jesus is saying this, is that people can just get distracted, and that's one of the reasons that they don't follow God. Number two is this. He says another reason people get distracted is the deceitfulness of wealth. I think we've talked about that plenty here, but Jesus goes on essentially in this area to say this, is that you can't serve both God and money. And then he makes this really tough statement, at least to me. He says this, either you're going to hate one and love the other, or love one and despise the other. Just strong language to me. So here's the question for you. Let's say you have both God and money. Now, which one is the one you love and which is the one that you hate, you personally? And listen, I understand that like we all have to have a certain amount of money to function in the world. Jesus had money, right? Like, I don't think he had probably a lot of money, but I think that Jesus did have money. And so the problem is not money. The problem is the love of money. And you just have to understand that people, you live in a culture that's going to tell you that what you ultimately need is more money in order to be successful. And at some point, that's going to split your allegiance with God. At some point in your life, you're going to have to ask yourself this question. Is your bottom line getting money, or is your bottom line pleasing God? Because sometimes, take it from me, someone who left the corporate world, graphic design world, to come to work at a church, at some point, money and pleasing God oftentimes has a way of splitting. And you're just going to have to make that choice. So seed that fell among thorns, we're talking about people who are distracted. Lastly, number four is this, seed that fell on good soil. Jesus says this, but the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. So this is the heart that hears the word of God and receives it and grows. So the summary would be something like this. This beloved parable reminds us that the determining factor in seeing God's word transform your life is not primarily the seed, just God's word, or even the sower, God, right? Of these three, the sower, seed, and the soil, which is your heart, is the only thing that's changing. Of course, both the sower and the seed are necessary to even give someone a choice, but at the end of the day, the condition of your soul will determine the fruit of your life. So that's number two, is the condition of your heart determines how you do in the Christian life. Lastly, number three is this point, don't judge. That's what these stories are telling you, don't judge. Remember the workers, right? The workers of the master, they say this, should we pull out the weeds? Remember they're asking, should we be the ones to pull out the weeds? And I just think it's always the temptation of religious people to try to sort out the good from the bad. Right? Like that would be our job. Here's the good people, here's the bad people. And the farmer comes who represents God, right? And he essentially says this, don't get into the weeding business. Like, just don't do it. Like, that's none of your business. Like, who are the good people and who are the bad people and who are the, you know, who are in and who are out and all of that stuff. I think he's abundantly clear that you let them all grow. Because you know what? You know what? If you do get in the weeding business, you know what you do? You end up hurting the good people too. Right? So we don't spend our time there. And what's so interesting here is that when it comes to regular farming, weeding is actually necessary, right? Like if you don't do it, you're not a good farmer. And that's why this is so surprising, is that I believe what Jesus is saying is this, is that weeds are no good, but weeding, being the person who's doing the weeding and the deciding, that's just as bad or maybe worse. Think about Jesus and his treatment of judgmental people. I told you this before, but I think of all of the sins that you could commit, and there's a lot of interesting ones, don't pick being judgmental. That's got to be the worst one. Like, I just think Jesus is ruthless when it comes to judgmental people. And ironically, the people who are in the act of separating the good people from the bad people, that very act of doing the separating is the thing that makes them part of the bad people. right? So like they're trying to say, these are the good people and these are the bad people. And just doing that makes them one of the bad people, right? Like think about the Pharisees, right? Jesus is saying, or the Pharisees come and say like, oh, we thank God that we are not like these sinners. Remember that? And then Jesus comes and says like, you're worse. You're worse than those guys. And so don't judge. Number three, the fruit is what counts. Number two, the condition of your heart determines how you do in the Christian life. And number three, don't judge. Here's my closing statement. It's three slides and then we'll receive communion. Your heart is like a field where seed has been sown. The condition of your heart is what determines whether that seed will grow or die. And it's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to guard your heart from becoming hard, from becoming offended, and from becoming distracted. The responsibility for the quality of your relationship with God is yours and yours alone. And in the end, all will be made known. Your motives, your words, your actions, all will be laid bare. And it will be by your fruit that you will be judged. So worry about the log in your own eye and don't spend another minute judging others. No one is getting away with anything, not ultimately. And you're not the one who has the wisdom to differentiate the wheat from the weeds. So stop weeding. Leave that up to God. Instead, continue to cultivate your own relationship with him and learn to trust him with all that you are. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and prepare for communion. I actually have for you tonight two more parables, if you can believe it, but it's only like two verses. But they were just so good that I had to include them in the series or I'd be really sad. So this is the parable of the mustard seed and the parable of the yeast, and literally three verses, two parables. It says this, he's talking about Jesus. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds come and perch in its branches. No explanation. Right? Verse 33, another parable. Then he told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into about 60 pounds of flour until it worked all through the dough. Parable over. No explanation. So I just think it's amazing. For me, these ones are pretty straightforward. In that what Jesus is saying is this, is that there ends up being small things in your life, things that seem really insignificant, like a little bit of yeast, right? Or like a little, just a tiny little seed that can end up being the things that end up making a huge difference in your life. And I can think for me personally, like I've been coming to this church for 35 years now. My mom started attending when she was pregnant with me. But if I'm being honest, I feel like I've only started taking my relationship with Jesus like drop dead serious probably in the last 15. That's my honest guess. Before that, I was just a kid, you know how it is. But for me, it's just amazing when I think about who I am, and I even talk with my parents about this, and sometimes it's just amazing to see how life can really change you when you end up finding yourself living in a place that you never thought you would have before. I don't know if anybody else is like that. But man, if I think for me, like, rewind 15 years ago and show me who I was, or like who I am, like I wouldn't have believed it. I'm not sure, my parents probably would have believed it. They've always been very supportive. But my friends would not have believed it. I don't think Jesse would have believed it. And so it's just amazing how life can really do something really incredible and you can find yourself in a really amazing place if you have the courage to make consistent and meaningful changes in your life, even though they can seem really small. And it's not making huge changes, but it's about growing, right? It's about learning. And so here's the question as they pass communion, is this question, are you growing? Are you growing? Like, are you gradually learning to entrust more of your life to God? Are you different now than you were 2 years ago? Honestly, think about it. Think about you 2 years ago. Have you grown? Right? Like, are you open to him coming in and changing wrong ideas in your mind? Here's the problem. We all have wrong ideas in our mind. The problem is we just don't know which ones are wrong or we would change them. Are you open to him coming in and correcting you, even if that hurts? Does he have the freedom in your life to mold you like clay, even if it's really small, gradual changes? Have you given him that piece of your heart, that real deep down part that nobody else has access to, where he can come and speak to you and he can make you grow, where you're learning and you're changing, and like there's just this little seed in your spirit that continues as you foster that with your relationship, that's growing and transforming you into something entirely new. So are you growing? So you guys can go ahead and pass. Just hold on to the elements and then we'll receive together. Thank you. This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. It is made ready for those who love him and for those who want to love him more. So come, you who have much faith and you who have little, you who have been here often and you who have not been here long, you who have tried to follow and you who have failed. Come, because it is the Lord who invites you. It is his will that those who want him should meet him here. So come to the table. Allow me to pray for you. Jesus, I come before you tonight on behalf of my brothers and sisters, my friends in this room. And my prayer is this, is that I just feel so strongly sometimes for the precious hearts that have to go through this really long journey that's just life. And just knowing that sometimes following you consistently for a really long time can be something that's really a pretty impressive feat. My prayer for my friends in this room is that you would keep them strong. You would keep their hearts tender. You would keep them away from bitterness, offense, and distraction, just and busyness. But instead, you would keep us sensitive to you, that we would be able to hear you and follow after you and continue to grow. There's not a single person in this room tonight that doesn't want to grow. And so we ask that you would help us and you would mold us and you would form us into people that are becoming more sensitive to you, more sensitive to each other, quicker to forgive, better at resisting offense, better at resisting distraction, better at resisting busyness. Tori, just make time to rest in you and to hear from you and to receive from you. And we say thank you for that. And so Jesus, tonight we remember your death and we proclaim your resurrection and we await your return. We remember your death, we proclaim your resurrection, and we await